This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Get into our MGO blog roundtable crew, who I'm sure, we're going to be talking Big Ten championship, but isn't it sweet to hear the misery, the despair that's coming out of Columbus, because I guess they were sick. They were sick. That's why they quit in that game, guys. They were sick. And then out of East Lansing, when it came to the Heisman Trophy finalists, because the brand names are getting rewarded here. Yeah, Pitt is getting rewarded because they're a brand name. Just great to hear all the crying. I'm wondering how you guys taking it all in.
Well, I'm happy. I'm very happy because, you know, and then my happiness is kind of like cascading, right? Because like they get unhappy that I'm happy. And then I get happier because of that. And then they see that I'm so happy that they get more unhappy. And then that makes me happier. And it's kind of like Michigan's defense, where, like, you know, the play up front makes things easier on the linebackers. The way the linebackers play makes life easier on the defensive backs. And it just cascades to, like, the whole thing is just this wonderful Big Ten championship season, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, man. Award season. So you got the Lombardi Trophy for Aiden. You got the Broyles Award for Gaddis. I'm curious what you guys think of Coach of the Year, because we're going to spend the next hour talking about the games, talking about Iowa, talking about Georgia. But I think Jim Harbaugh has a real case, and it feels like people forgot that Michigan was a 2-4 team last year. I mean, this is a dramatic improvement. And who else, when you talk about what they were last year versus what they are this year, has done a better job than Jim Harbaugh?
Yeah, a few things. Going back to the OSU complaints about being sick, when exactly did that Ohio State team quit? At least when exactly did that Ohio State defense quit? Because if they did quit, it's sort of hard to tell when it happened. I mean, because they didn't put up much resistance throughout the fourth quarter, or maybe the whole game, actually. So, well, that's number one. Number two is, if you're sick, why are you playing? It seems like that's not right. I mean, if you have flu, last time I checked, flu is communicable, and they shouldn't be playing at all. So what in the world are they talking about there? In terms of MSU, they seem to be under some misconception about the Heisman. They seem to think that it's awarded somehow by Michigan, and in fact, it's actual voting. You know, people vote, and they're upset, maybe not over the outcome, but the fact that their guy doesn't go to the award ceremony. Well, as I understand it, the top four vote-getters go to the award ceremony, and it's not any sort of conspiracy by Michigan. It's actually what happened in the vote, and I mean, their guy is a wonderful player. There's no question, but it wasn't Michigan that decided Aiden Hutchinson was in the top four. It was the people who voted who decided Hutchinson was in the top four. So, any event on that, I forgot what the other thing
was. I was asking about Jim Harbaugh's case for Coach of the Year.
Well, it is curious, I guess, that that Mel Tucker won the award in the Big Ten after, you know, Ohio State could have beat them by 100. But, I mean, it was 49-0 at half, and they did also lose to a Purdue team that was only okay and gave up 40 points there. But, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, Michigan State was terrible last year. They were as terrible or maybe even more terrible than Michigan. And so they did turn their program around with almost everyone or a lot of guys from the transfer portal. And I thought that team made a lot of strides this year. So I don't have an issue really with that. I mean, it's It's just an, you know, these things are just awards anyway. What does it matter? But, you know, I don't have a problem.
Yeah. Let me read you the last winners of the AP Coach of the Year award. It's Jamie Chadwell from Coastal Carolina. That one's fair. Ed Orgeron, Brian Kelly, Scott Frost, Mike McIntyre. Those are the last guys who just so. I mean, those awards are kind of silly. The Coach of the Year award often just says that, like, oh, you had a, you know, bad team that got lucky, and, you know, Michigan, I think, was not a bad team that got lucky. I think that they were a good team that got injured last year and had a lot of issues. I think Harbaugh has a good case just because the staff changes he made and the way those all worked out for him. It's weird how things get, you know, put on coaches sometimes. I'm so tickled that Josh Gattis is getting recognition, right? Like, after this whole season and after years of people being like, Josh, you know, Gattis is just Harbaugh is running his own stuff and Josh is just calling his plays. And, like, Josh Gattis has, you know, learned to run a Michigan offense. He's learned to run, like, Harbaugh stuff, obviously, right? There's fullbacks in the offense now. That was not Josh Gattis. But, I mean, the man's the Broyles Award winner. And that says something. That tells you that, like, other coaches out there looking and seeing the things that Michigan's doing on a play-by-play basis, on just putting all their offense together, the way that they're organized is so much better. Jim Harbaugh, whether he's Coach of the Year or not, doesn't matter to me. The fact that this program looks so much more organized than they have in years, I think it's just a credit to him and a credit to how they looked at what their issues were beyond some of the bad luck that they were having, and they fixed a lot of those problems.
So what do we think? Curious choice. I guess I didn't think Oklahoma State was the bastion of defense.
Of defense, they're usually terrible on defense.
I thought that was a very interesting pickup. The Big 12
they're
is
like number
a,
three
is
in
all
Michigan
offense.
Defense this year, though.
The Big 12 is all offense, right? And then, so if you can play defense in the Big 12, that, like, who can play defense in the Pac 12? Matt Campbell's team, and all of a sudden Oklahoma State was able to. That was a big thing. I don't know how it's going to work in the Big 10 because nobody runs a spread offense here except for Nebraska. Like, Ohio State's going to kill Nebraska now. But who else is running a four wide spread? Like, they run all over the Big 12. Like, that's what they're really good at stopping, right?
Sam Webb here with Ira Weintraub and the MGO Blog Roundtable crew, starting with Brian Cook, BC. How you doing?
Good.
Good to see you, my man. And, of course, fresh off of a trip to Indy, Craig Ross. How are you?
Doing great. You always complain how old I am, but you call Brian Cook BC. That's all I'm saying.
And then, of course, Seth Fisher. Seth, how are you this morning?
Top of the world, man. Top of the world.
All right. And I don't complain about how old you are. I make reference to
I know.
I complain.
You complain. Yeah, I know.
Well,
I marvel.
No complaints, fellas. Zero complaints about the Big Ten champion Wolverines. I know there was some thought that maybe there would be the hangover effect after you beat down Ohio State. You made them quit. You made them tap out, right? That what could be better than Ohio State crying about how sick they were in the game, and that's the reason they lost. Nothing gets better than that. But Michigan, they go out, they compartmentalize, they put that game behind them. And fellas, they won that game in a fashion that few outside of Ann Arbor thought they could. I know initially I thought it would be a tighter game by the time we got the game time, and hearing from everyone on the inside, it's like, oh, they're going to blow them out 35-10. They were even better than that, Brian. 42-3. I don't know who saw that coming.
Well, I think everybody saw it coming after the first quarter. Well, I mean, you go into this game and you're like, this is one of the worst offenses in the country. And for them to be 10-2 is miraculous. And you go look at their individual games and they're like winning games by gaining 170 yards. So what are they going to do when they have to go up against Aiden Hutchinson? And it turns out that they don't have the ability to run a bunch of college crap like a Rutgers or a Nebraska because they're coached by Brian Ferentz. As soon as Michigan downloaded Brian Ferentz
the offense,
OC. And so they had the waggle stuff going in the first half, and as soon as Michigan adjusted to that, like first play of the second half, it was over. Like, they had nothing else. So
yeah, I mean, in the first half, that really was about all they had were the waggles, and they and otherwise they tried to get the ball out extremely quickly to avoid the problems that Hutchinson and Ojabo cause. And so the ball got out very quickly, and the quarterback just really didn't have the ability to do that, nor were their receivers creating much separation. So they resorted to, wide zone slash waggle, and it worked a bit, but when they got into the red zone, they were cooked, and when they got into the second half, they were really gone in terms of their ability to do anything on offense.
Yeah, they had that third and five from the five. So third and goal from the five.
Yeah.
They were on a two-man route. They leave eight guys to protect. Right. And then it's just like, can this guy win one-on-one against DJ Turner? And the answer is no. So that was all they had, was just pray that one of the receivers can make a play. After Michigan did a really good job against Ohio State's receivers last week, that was just never going to work.
I thought the game was probably over when they come down the field, Seth. They have a play. I mean, mm-hmm. they got a play in the end zone. Touchdown, right? They don't get that. Then field goal. They miss that. And then Michigan comes out and boom, touchdown, 14-point swing. It's like that kind of gut punch. There's just no way this team is going to get up off the mat.
Yeah, I mean, that the way that game started and the fact that Michigan got three huge plays in a row, actually, on offense, with sandwiched with that, Iowa just missing their own running back throw. I mean, that was huge because Iowa's entire way of winning this game was to Iowa up the game. And they Iowa upped a huge part of this game, right? There was like one throw to Eric All that was a little bit behind him, and then like it just miraculously ends up in the linebacker's hands. That is Iowa. That's how Iowa gets you. And then like Michigan keeps on fielding punts at the 7-3 yard line, and you can't really run your offense when you're in the shadow of your own goalposts. And so, you know, Michigan's just backed up all the time. That is how you Iowa someone to death, and that's how Iowa wins their football games. So Michigan breaking through early and getting those points up, I thought once it was a 2-score lead, I'm like, Iowa, there's no way. Iowa's going to have to make some incredible plays. They had one scripted drive, and after that, just nothing. And Brian made the point on the podcast about, like, we're upset that if they were only going to score 3 points, that they did it in a way that did not maximize Aiden Hutchinson's stats.
Yeah, I mean, like, they weren't going to win this game, so they can at least win someone a Heisman. Right. Let's think of the broader picture, Iowa.
See, now, you know, there, you look at stats for Heismans, right? But I thought that there was a Heisman moment in this game, just like the Thayer Mumford play. I don't know what the right tackle for Iowa, what his name is, but he got Thayer Mumford in this game. It was worse because this dude laid sprawled out on the field. I don't know if you guys remember the play.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I saw it from the press box. He just murdered another offensive tackle. It's uncanny. He is the most dominant lineman, in my opinion, in college football. We'll talk about this more as we get into the Georgia preview. But again, he shows up in this game, and just you just felt like there was no hope for an offense that has been – they have been terrible for the most part all season long, buoyed by a defense and special teams that give them extra chances. So you get in the second half of this game when Michigan, when they get a stop and they go down the field and get a score, just like Ohio State, right? Game's over right there.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, 21-3 was it. And, like, if we can go back to the first half, you know, that back-to-back big play thing I think is – sort of a crowning achievement for Josh Gattis this year. So they bring in McCarthy. McCarthy draws a lot of attention, and then Corum's able to make a move in the secondary to get loose. And then the play after that, back to back, going for the jugular, is Donovan Edwards with the halfback pass. And then the play after that is a 38-yard chunk where AJ Henning is on an end around and everybody else gets lost because the action's going the other way. So those were the first 30-yard runs Iowa had given up this year, and that was the longest pass they had given up. So bang, bang, bang. If we don't have an ultimate Iowa moment on that delay route, Michigan's probably going in and scoring. I know Devin was talking about how their post was open on that too. So if get a little bit more confidence from the quarterback on that play, it's bang, 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 four in a row, and it's 21-3, and this is ugly and out of hand immediately.
I wonder what you guys thought about this. I mean, you had those three plays that totaled, I think, about almost 180 yards back to back to back. But I also felt like the quarterback play was a little bit sloppy in the first half. The second half was fine. PFF loved Cade's play in this game, but I thought there were missed a couple of guys. I mean, what did Devin think?
Devin all year has been like, these guys are open downfield. You need to throw it.
Yeah,
all year. Like every time I like listen to a part of the show, it looks like Devin's like, this guy's open. This guy's open. This guy's open. Mm-hmm. Throw the ball. So there was more of that in this game, but maybe that's just not who McNamara is. And that's why he's got three interceptions on the year. That's why he's a game manager. Now, I don't know if game managing is going to be enough against Georgia, but it sure as hell was against Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was better in the second half, to your point, Craig. And
he played well in the second half, in my opinion.
Yeah, they made some adjustments when it came to handling their pressure. Because, I mean, Iowa, give them credit. At least they didn't quit like Ohio State. You know, they were still trying in the second half of that game. And they're a smart defense. They have some players over there. They just got. Right, they were blowing up Michigan's counter. Michigan hits them with a wheel off counter action. Right, I mean they were doing different things with their blitzes to throw Michigan off, and it just wasn't enough. They don't get enough. It's not a complete team. It's not a complete team, and you need a complete team to beat this Michigan team. And how about that? How about saying that Michigan football 2-4 team staff makeover is Big Ten champ and going to the national playoff. And I feel like you got to say it again to really bring it back to the fore, bring that perspective back to the fore, that the way that they were able to persevere, the way they were allowed to persevere, right? I think all those guys are rightfully taking a bow right now. And you wonder what that's going to mean for two things. Number one, contract for Jim Harbaugh. Number two, who's leaving? Right. Because you know, when you have this kind of success, other teams, other programs try to come poach. I think the most likely guy would be Gattis, especially on the heels of a Broyles award.
Well, the issue with the playoff is no one wants to leave a playoff team. And I think the coaching carousel is going to be done by the time that Gattis is actually available. So that might be something where you're looking at another year down the road, perhaps, where Michigan isn't in this situation. So it, like, VT is filled now. Virginia's filled. Like, a lot of the kind
they hired him. They hired Tony Elliott.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but at this juncture, I think it would be an upset if it wasn't Tony Elliott. So those kind of jobs where it's like, okay, yeah, we're going to get a coordinator who's pretty good from a Power Five school, those seem to be closing. And then, you know, we'll see if anything else opens up. But I think the combination of the early signing period and the playoff stuff is makes it pretty unlikely that Gattis is going to get a hedge up this year. And then we'll see if anybody else, these guys are all pretty young, so they might not feel the urge to go somewhere else right away. They might want to like build a little bit more of a resume, maybe do a Venables thing where Venables holds out and he gets the Oklahoma job. Like,
crazy.
That's pretty good.
Right.
So,
yeah. You never know what's going to pop
Michigan
open.
Maybe Michigan gets Keon Sab about the deal.
Yeah. It's not right. Bad.
I mean, you never know what's going to pop open. I was surprised Dave Clawson has not gotten a lot of looks, the Wake Forest head coach. I was imagining going into the season or going into like the end of the season here in the coaching carousel that someone was going to look at Dave Clawson because he's done a great job at Wake. And if he goes, that's Gattis' alma mater, right? Like that's got to be a slam dunk, which I'd be fine with because I would go after Dave Clawson's offensive coordinator right away.
Well, I mean, Clawson's done a great job at Wake, but historically Wake is not a place that sends a lot of coaches to other destinations other than the unemployment line. So, I mean, that's a decision you might want to make. I don't know, but that's always like, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So fellas, let's shift attention to one of the other championships games, I should say, the SEC championship game. Georgia gets out to a 10-0 lead, and then Bama, Bryce Young, he starts to warm up and they start scoring. And suddenly that Georgia defense is like, all right, well, we are having some problems stopping these guys. Offense, let's go. We need to trade with these dudes. And they couldn't do it. And I think that was, I think it was maybe revelatory to the country about how incomplete that team is. Now they aren't Iowa. I'm not accusing them of having a, you know, totally inept offense, but dude, this is not your typical Georgia offense. This is not the Georgia offense with Sony Michel and Mecole Hardman out there and Nick Chubb and Fromm. This is not that crew that Michigan's going to see on Saturday. And how about this statement? I'm curious where you guys fall on it. Say what you want about Michigan at the quarterback position. I think they're in better shape than Georgia.
Well, I mean, Georgia's in an interesting spot because they imported JT Daniels from USC in the offseason, and he plays a couple games, gets hurt, and then Stetson Bennett's been the guy ever since. And, you know, they're scoring 37 points against Arkansas, and Bennett's putting up 72 passing yards. So, you know, when they've gotten against teams that can really play, which hasn't really happened this much, their schedule is not great. You know, Bennett has kind of seemed like an issue. So they win against Clemson 10-3 to start the season off, right? And then they put up 24 against Alabama, and they haven't really seen a defense like either of those teams anywhere between those two. And I feel like
putting up 10 points, that was without an offensive touchdown, by the way.
Right. So I feel like Michigan is going to be able to slow the Georgia offense down. It's just the other side of the ball is concerning, because this is, until they get in the Alabama game, one of the best defenses, I think, in the last 10 years of college football. And so I think that's probably real. If you look at the players going up and down the roster, they seem pretty well built to stop Michigan's ground game. They have a Wisconsin level rush defense, and Michigan kind of scuffled against Wisconsin's defense. And again, if that was a more complete team, that would have been a game. So I think this is going to be a tight slugfest, and I think Michigan can slow their offense down, but also vice versa.
Yeah, I find it hard to evaluate Georgia just given their schedule this year. I mean, they played four abject meatballs, and their most of the rest of their teams, like Florida, had a down year. They were 6-6. Auburn was 6-6. They weren't a great team. They had some moments. Tennessee, I watched a couple times and were pretty raggedy. They were 7-5. You know, Missouri, they played. They were 6-6. They weren't all that good. I mean, the best teams they probably played were Arkansas and Kentucky at home. And I don't think either Arkansas or Kentucky is as good a team as Michigan or anywhere close. I guess they had Clemson in the opener at Clemson. They scored 10 points. But again, Clemson wasn't a great team this year either. So it's hard to look at their schedule and say, yeah, they were just killing it when the level of competition was pedestrian for them this year. And so it's hard for me to evaluate, but I tend to agree with Brian in that their defense looks really good, except against Alabama. And Michigan's going to have, you know, Michigan isn't going to get out of what they do. Michigan's right. Going to do what they do, but they're going to have to do something else in this game, because I don't think they can just run power and pin and pulls at them without that big nose guard blowing some stuff up.
Yeah, he's going to knock off a lot of pullers. I agree with you.
Yeah.
He's a problem. He's the one that scares me the most.
He's the problem. He's the problem for Michigan.
Their linebackers are great, too. They've got some, like, Devin Bush speed back at the linebacker level, which Michigan has not seen this year, and which is going to take away some of the things that Michigan's been doing late in the season with Dominic Edwards, or, you know, getting Blake Corum back and having that. Like, I think that Georgia's going to be able to match our backfield for speed on the edge, which is not something that Michigan's seen before. And Alabama just took to the air and used the talent. And I'm 100% Devin Gardner on this one. Like, Michigan's going to have to throw the ball downfield to beat these guys.
Yeah, I mean, there was a play where Jamison Williams just gave a little shimmy, and that completely destroyed the safety who was trying to bracket that guy. And he wins over the top on a bracket. So does Michigan have Jamison Williams? No. But they also have the most 50-yard plays of anybody in the country this year. So if they can do that, they can win that game.
Well, yeah, I think they're going to have to be more quarterback dependent in this game for sure. But they're not going to get Bryce Young type production. At least they can't plan to. You can hope that happens, but I don't think you can plan to get
400 plus yards passing in this game. You know, how do you achieve advantages? I don't think their linebackers match up with Donovan Edwards. Now, that in the passing game, if you can get him on the perimeter against their linebackers, I like that matchup. I like him. I like Donovan Edwards against any linebacker in the country. Let's go. Please, let's do that. I think that works. But I think more importantly in their run game, not to be a broken record, I think this is where a game where J.J. McCarthy, a little more J.J. in the mix, sort of helps that run game a little more. I think this is a contest where, you know, if his usage is, I don't know what the number is, let's just arbitrarily call it 15%. He has 15% usage. That's up at the 25 in this game, fellas, because I think that him on the field helps your run game. It helps you sort of keep them a little more honest than if it's Cade as much as we see him in most games.
Yeah, and then we got to run a flea flicker every quarter.
which they can do. Hey, man, that's the thing about – but listen, you were laughing, but that's not ridiculous.
No, it is not. Michigan State ran a flea flicker in every game they played this year, and it still kept working. So keep it going. Michigan's run
he has the ability – like, none of these flea flickers are the same. I mean, he's running these flea flickers from different looks. They look like different plays every time. So, I mean, you can be unpredictable with the flea flicker. As I'm with you, I'm pulling out all that stuff. And with 3 weeks to prepare, yeah, man. Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the ways that they get down the field.
Well, and I think the JJ point is salient, especially with 3 weeks to prepare, right? Like, they had the package for Ohio State with the diamond backfield. Mm-hmm. And so are you going to run that against Georgia? Probably you shouldn't. Probably what you should do is you should come up with something else that they haven't seen before and see if you can get people moving the wrong direction, which is going to happen when you have someone like JJ out there. JJ Edwards, I mean, McCarthy, fast as Blake Corum.
Wasn't a great
that was remarkable, wasn't it? I mean,
Corum says he slowed up. I don't think he did.
Maybe he had the flu.
I don't think he did. I know the Iowa safety who he was outrunning did.
He had the flu. Yeah, I think Seth has a point. Corum had the flu. So, you know, he slowed up a little bit there.
Just means that the entire Ohio State team is anti-vaxxers, which we already knew. Get your flu shot. CJ Stroud, safe and effective.
Oh, man. It's funny to hear him cry. Go ahead, Craig.
I was just going to say the two things that Brian, I mean, this is so right. What you guys are saying is that, you know, the fact that Michigan late in the season got Donovan Edwards involved in the pass game made the offense just so much more dimensional. And that was just fantastic by the coaching staff, the way they've done it. And the fact that they've got, extra time to get him involved against Georgia in other ways, perhaps, is great. And it's the same for JJ. I mean, read options. The whole point of read options is it gives you an extra player on the field in the run game. And so I agree that with you, Sam, that it will probably behoove Michigan to have a little more of that in this game. So.
Yeah, I mean, unless they, you know, want to get out of their comfort zone of who they are. I mean, if you want to run the football and have it be a consistent part of your game against this, just on paper. I know you got to see it on the field. Yeah. You're going to test them. But just on paper, you need J.J. McCarthy in this game. You need that element to run the football as effectively as they're going to need to, or they want to stay balanced with their offense. It's just... I mean, people are talking about how Bama did it. This is who can forecast 400 plus yards throwing from Michigan. I mean, there's nothing to suggest that's something that you can predict will happen. You can certainly hope it will, but I'm not going into this game thinking they're going to get Bryce Young performance from the quarterback position. So how do you achieve some running sort of efficacy in this contest? To me, JJ McCarthy. So
yeah, I mean, I'm not sure Michigan needs 400 yards passing. I mean, because I'm not sure I agree with Brian that the Georgia offense is all that dynamic. And I'm not sure that Michigan can't control, you know, that offense. So I'm not sure they'll need 400 yards passing, but they're going to need something, you know, and because Georgia isn't going to get shut out in this game either.
Right. All right. We need to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side. More MGo Blog Roundtable when we return here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. The Ticket.
All clear on the radio. All clear on the radio.
I got to tell you guys what happened in the bar before down in Indianapolis. So we're sitting in the bar with Dave Nasternak and my wife and a friend of Dave's, Larissa, and we're eating, and the guy at the next table is really loud, and he's telling this story how he keeps getting confused with this other Craig Ross. And
are you kidding?
And so the guy is wearing a Purdue shirt, and it turns out he's with his niece, who is an Iowa student. And so I think, this is too weird. I'm just not. And I thought I didn't hear it right. But then Sue turns to me and says, what is he talking about? Craig Ross, what is this? And so I'm not saying anything. And so Larissa says, hey, this guy's named Craig Ross. And so the guy is named Craig Ross. He's from just outside of Indianapolis. He sells, he's a wonderful man. He's a salesman. And he says this other Craig Ross keeps, you know, getting confused, or he keeps getting their mail or emails or whatever. And I said, well, I'm not that Craig Ross. Anyway, it was just weird. But he was so happy to meet another Craig Ross who was not the Craig Ross who keeps getting confused. He keeps getting confused.
No one's confused him for a 3,000-year-old druid yet.
Yeah, no, he was younger than me.
Googled his name and discovered the things that we know about Craig Rossi.
Yeah, just a very, very weird event.
All right, I'm just pulling up some of the comments. Here's one. I think that goes without saying, Doughboy. I think that goes without saying. Yes, they have to double team Jordan Davis. I think that goes without saying. What is
it? Yeah, I don't see Vastardis handling him by himself.
This is a good point, too. That dude does get tired. Yeah. He does get tired.
We're not a tempo team, though.
That's a question. I thought Iowa might run some tempo against us. They ran one play in the game, I think.
Yeah, because I asked our Iowa guy about that. I said, would they bring some tempo to the equation? He says, not really in their purview. And they came out, they tried it, but it's just so far outside of their DNA. Mm-hmm. But when I say he gets tired, to me, it's more of a second half thing. Like, can you stick with stay with your game plan enough to still be running the football in the second half? If you can, that dude. Yeah, he starts to bend over a little bit. The fatigue starts to set in, but you got to get there. You got to get to that point. And yes, the starters will need help with this dude.
Yeah.
No question.
And if he's fighting two guys, you know, at the line, he may get more and more tired. It's hard fighting two big guys, regardless of how big you are.
Back in 1 minute, guys, on the radio. Back in 1 minute. I'm pretty sure Iowa did go up-tempo. They snapped the ball with like 4 seconds left on the clock a few times. That's up-tempo for Iowa, isn't it?
I recall one play where they tried to tempo Michigan, and it didn't work real well, and then they said, forget it. So
where did he say he was from, Ira? Did he have his...
Didn't have a location.
Okay. I know I saw Singapore on there at some point.
Singapore, yep.
We've had a Singapore.
We're huge in Singapore.
We did last week. We had two, or maybe it was Monday for Devin. One of the last couple times we were live, we had two different viewers from Singapore at the same time. All right, we're back in about 10 seconds, guys. Stand by.
I don't know who he has to politic with to get that done, but I mean, man, that dude, it's amazing that he's as effective as he is with how much he gets held.
Yeah.
Coming back on radio in 5, 4, 3.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. So it should come as no surprise, fellas, as we bring the MGo Blog Roundtable crew back on. Brian Cook, Craig Ross, Seth Fisher. They think it's a foregone conclusion in the South that they're going to win this game. And I'm You know, is that just pure Southern bias? You know, am I missing something about this Georgia team? But they seem convinced that Georgia is going to handle Michigan with no problem. Is that just Southern arrogance, Brian Cook?
Well, I mean, last time a team from Michigan got in the playoff, they didn't score a point, lost 37-0. So maybe it's based on that.
Okay. No, don't give Michigan any credit. It was 38-0, Brian.
Oh, 38. Sorry.
Yeah, I can't believe you shorted them a point.
That is a great point, Brian. Okay, now, yeah, you see that. I mean, the last time a Michigan team was in the playoff, give them credit, but they got – has Michigan State scored a point, Ira, in the playoff?
Not in the playoff, Sam, no.
Oh, Michigan's going to hope to be the second Big Ten team to ever score a point in the playoffs.
So, okay, against that backdrop, I guess it makes sense that they would be cocky arrogant. Not just a little bit arrogant, but cocky arrogant. And I keep asking myself, we're just now getting into the Georgia film. We haven't made it through every game. We have every game, but we haven't made it through all of them yet, or even one of them in full, to be frank with you. But I'm excited. I don't see what they see. I don't see this. Like Craig, like you said, I mean, I think you got to look at their opponents, and so much stock is being put into what those opponents were ranked when they played them.
Yeah.
How good are those opponents in retrospect, right? I think that's what's more important. And they haven't really beaten anyone, you know, of real note, Brian, that would make you think they'd be able to come in and dominate Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, so this is not a vintage SEC, right? So I'm not going to downplay the fact that Georgia and Alabama are the two most talented teams in the country and have a lot of things going for them. But, like, who's the third best team in the SEC? Kentucky. Is that a vintage SEC when Kentucky is the third best team? No. So this is a situation where, yeah, they don't really have a quality win on their resume that looks good. What they did do is they did absolutely face stomp everybody they played. And that is something that, you know, whenever you ask anyone who puts together these ranking systems, if that matters, the answer is yes. So they are the number one team in SP Plus by a significant margin. I think they're a 6-point favorite in the fancy stats, and they're a 7.5-point favorite in Vegas. They should be favored. They have a ton of talent, and Michigan is going to have a hard time winning this game, but it's going to be competitive. It's not going to be a complete blowout. It's going to be a game now. And if anyone thinks it's not going to be a game, then I have issues with that. But yeah, Georgia's good.
What do we think?
I mean,
go ahead, Craig.
I just keep coming back to the last half of their season. They beat a crappy Florida team, a crappy Tennessee team, a dreadful Georgia Tech team, a bad Missouri team, a really awful Charleston Southern team. That's the end of their schedule. Until they play Alabama, where they get kicked around. And so, you know, when I look at that, I said, okay, I don't care. It's like Minnesota last night in basketball. They were 7-0. They were 7-0 against the worst schedule I've ever seen a Big Ten team play. And, you know, Michigan State took them apart, you know, in that game last night. And so the level of competition means something. And so I look at this, and I'm not saying Georgia isn't good. I'm not saying they won't win. But you look at, you know, at who they played. You know, if Michigan plays Northern Illinois and Ball State and Western all year and they win them all by 40 or 50 points, I don't care what the fancy stats say at that juncture. And so I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure. Now, maybe Missouri and Tennessee and Florida were really okay, good teams in a competitive league or playing competitive games. But if you look at those, I don't think so either. And so I just am not sure about Georgia. But it's not the Southern consciousness. It's the country consciousness. It's the gambling consortium consciousness. And the casinos are begging for money on Michigan. Because that line is going up. And so the public consciousness is that Georgia's, you know, an 8.5+ favorite. And that's a lot. And that's a lot of difference in these games. On the other hand, the very ill Ohio State team was also, I think, a 7.5 or 8-point favorite against Michigan. They didn't know, however, how ill that team really was.
Vegas took a stance on that game, right?
Yes.
Vegas was like, we have all the money on Ohio State, and we're fine with that.
Well, except for one. Yes, that's correct. One book in particular, because the line in Vegas went to over 8 in that game, except one sports book left it right at 6. So they were begging for Ohio State money. They wanted to take a stance on this game on Michigan. So that sport book made money, and they knew what they were doing. And that's usually they want to balance the books, and that's why the line is moving around. But that wasn't true in the Ohio State game. But in any event, the public perception certainly is that this is a reasonably easy win for Georgia.
That's right. Seth, I mean, we got a comment from D Brown here in the YouTube stream that I think our coaches are much better than UGA's. What do we think of Kirby Smart as a coach? What do we think of the matchup on the sideline and in the box?
Smart's been a good coach for a long time. I remember Smart coming up as a coordinator and people talking about that guy as a superstar. He's a fantastic recruiter and he leans on his talent. So, I mean, Georgia has a ton of talent. They've got maybe more than Alabama if you want to like just break it down by pure 24/7 stars on the composite, right? And that's what they play to. They use the fact that they have a lot of talented guys and they're going to they're just going to beat you. James Cook, their running back, kind of come on later in the season. I know they use two of them. That guy, he's got speed. You have to stop it. So the coaching level of Kirby Smart, I've joked around about it because they keep their things simple. But simple works for them. That's what you want to do when you got that kind of talent. So, you know, keep in mind, I rip on the SEC, as part of my shtick. But I do have a lot of respect for that team, and it's a good football team. It's not when I joke around about Kirby Smart, it's, you know, I'm making recruiting jokes or whatnot. Like, that's because we're recruiting against him. When we're going to play them and I'm trying to preview a team, let's be real. They're a good team. They're well coached.
So, guys, let's assume for the sake of our argument, because I know I'm saying that, I'm phrasing it in that way because I know some Michigan fans get freaked out if you predict Michigan is going to win, especially this early. So let's assume for the sake of argument that Michigan beats Georgia. Is there any chance they face Cincinnati in that game, or is it Georgia? I mean, is it Bama for sure?
Yeah, I mean, Bama lost to an 8-4 Texas A&M team. They got outgained by a Florida team that was not good. They went to overtime against Auburn. This is not an Should have lost to Auburn. This is not an infallible Alabama team. And I kind of feel like that line for Cincinnati is, I don't really bet, but I would bet that they're able to keep this game relatively close. Like, this is not one of the juggernaut Alabama teams. They're a really good team, but this is not that team.
Cincinnati's a good team. People are discounting Cincinnati because they see Power 5. You know, they're not Power 5. But, you know, if you want to look at where Cincinnati stands in recruiting and how, like, long those guys have been on that team and how well they're coached, I mean, that team would fit anywhere in the Big Ten. Like, they are a better team than Michigan State by far, talent-wise. That was the problem at Michigan State is Fickell's been taking some of the recruits that they used to get, right? So, I mean, they would fit right in the Big Ten, right at the top of the Big Ten standings right now, if not number one in the Big Ten. So Cincinnati's real. And like Brian says, Alabama has not been great this year. Do you know Josh Jobe? Remember that guy that we were trying to recruit? Don Brown wanted him really bad. And then Michigan was just torching him and couldn't hit their receivers downfield against him in 2019. That guy's still their starting cornerback at Alabama. So this is not like an Alabama. They have just like every single mercenary at every single spot is going to kill you. They've got some spots where, you know, you can play against those guys.
Yeah, like they had one score games against LSU, Arkansas, Auburn, A&M, which they lost, and Florida. Like, that's a lot of mediocre teams to be in real games with.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So that makes the Georgia game look even better if you're from Michigan's perspective that they were able to just run roughshod all over that squad and challenge that Georgia offense to match, and they simply couldn't do it. I do want to give some time to get you guys, get your reaction to all the movement that we've seen on the coaching side of things. So
Let's stay close to home here real quick and talk about the Buckeyes. Ailing though they might be, sounds like they are, you know, still dealing with the flu symptoms over there, as you heard CJ Stroud talking about yesterday. But Ryan Day out here doing some work trying to fix that defense, and he goes and hires Oklahoma State's DC. And while they are high in the stats this year, I guess it didn't strike me that the Big 12 would be where you would go to look for a DC.
Well, not if you want to play Michigan, right? Because Oklahoma State runs a three safety system. They are really committed to playing Big 12 defense, and they're very good at playing Big 12 defense. But that probably isn't going to translate. And I mean, that's not the only thing this Knowles guy has done in his career. He was at Duke for a long time. But the thing that jumps out is like the last 2 years at Oklahoma State are really the only years in his career where he's had a defense that's like above mediocre. And he's 56, right? So like, it's not a situation where it's like, oh, he figured something out and now he's really good. Like, he just had the right combination of players and talent and scheme to win pretty well in the Big 12. Now, if he comes back to Ohio State, I'm sure he's going to be competent. Like, I'm sure he's going to be better than the mess that they had this year. And they're going to have a system where they have more options to go to when Michigan is running some things that exploit their tendencies. I don't think that they're going to be where they were before. But also, I don't think this guy is going to wave a magic wand and just be like the killer defensive coordinator that you would really fear.
I think he'll be better than Kerry Coombs. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't know.
Waiting for that.
Right. And he'll be better than their half-assed attempt to change their defense to a too high system mid-season, right? Like, they'll be better. But I don't think this guy is a miracle worker, because if he was, his career would look a lot different.
The other side of the ball has been where, like, the super high-level meta stuff has been going on. And I don't think Ohio State looked at this hire as, you know, here's what we got to do to beat what Michigan does. Unless, like, the only thing he knew about Michigan is that Josh Gattis's thing is hashtag speed and space. Because that's, I mean, having a good defense in the Big 12 is an accomplishment. They've got some crazy offenses down there, but they're mostly spread offenses. And the defenses that have done well, Iowa State and Oklahoma State follow them. Like Brian said, they're three high defenses, right? Those are the 404 tight defenses, kind of the thing that Army does, right? How many Big 10 teams run the kind of offenses that you use that defense against? Nebraska? I mean, yeah, Ohio State's not going to struggle with Nebraska anymore. Congratulations. But, like, Michigan's not one of those teams.
I would be surprised if Knowles tried to run that in the Big Ten.
Right.
Like, he'll probably be back to his conventional stuff. And then we'll see if he brings a little bit more juice than he did at Duke. And he's going to have way more talent at Duke than he had at Duke, of course. But I think he's a competent college DC, and anyone who's competent in college DC will probably do pretty well at Ohio State.
All right, so let's talk the head jobs that were filled. Close to home here is Marcus Freeman. They decided to stay in-house. That one was filled. Meanwhile, Oklahoma goes to get Brent Venables, which seemed to me the no-brainer choice from the beginning. Sounds like it wasn't. There was some landing talk over there out of Georgia as well. But what do you guys make of those two moves?
Well, if Tony Elliott does go to UVA, we're about to find out how much of a figurehead Dabo Swinney is.
Right.
Yeah. And like how much NIL leveling the playing field hurts Dabo Swinney. He's complaining a lot these days, and I enjoy it. Whenever Dabo opens his mouth, I'm like, oh, he's going to bitch about something, and it's going to be amazing. But yeah, I mean, Venables has been the best defensive coordinator in the country for a number of years. The only concern is, it's a Big 12 team. It's Oklahoma. What is the Oklahoma identity been? Is he gonna maintain that? Is he gonna still have that kind of offense, or is he gonna want to like kind of button it up a little bit? That's how it would go wrong, I think. But he's obviously a very good coach.
The Freeman thing is interesting to me because Kelly, it looks like, took exactly zero coaches with him. I mean,
think one guy just left for
one that, guy.
Yeah. One guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And, which is a little unusual.
but do you know Brian Kelly?
Well, as one.
It's like, we get to coach at Notre Dame without Brian Kelly here. Sign me up.
Yeah. I'm not going to name him, but I asked a coach once why Michigan State took D'Antonio over Kelly. And the comment was, because Brian Kelly is the worst person in the United States. So... so him, you know, and him going to LSU without any of his coaches sort of seems to maybe confirm that. I thought Freeman's comment was interesting as he badmouthed Ohio State.
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't that sort of curious? I mean, he said, I'm going to Notre Dame and not LSU this time because I made this mistake before.
Yeah, he doesn't want to make the same mistake twice.
Same mistake like, again when he went to Ohio State out of high school as opposed to, I guess he could have gone to Notre Dame.
He could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
He was a big time. Michigan recruited the hell out of that dude.
He's in the database. I think it's like the first big time coach who I think is in my like spreadsheet of old recruits.
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought that was a sort of unusual shot to take since they don't even play Ohio State very often.
I mean, I don't know. Trying to talk up the fact that you really want to be at Notre Dame is not so, I mean, Notre Dame people eat it up, but like if you're Marcus Freeman, everybody already loves you. You're a 35-year-old black guy and you got the head job at Notre Dame with no head coaching experience. They love you.
Yeah.
You don't have to like play it up. Right. So, but you know, I think it's an interesting move for Notre Dame. I think that their recruiting is going to pop up. I think that he was a big part of Cincinnati's success before moving to Notre Dame too. And I think that honestly, that was the right move. And I'm surprised that Notre Dame of all places made it.
Someone just said that Notre Dame plays at Ohio State the first game next year.
That's spicy meatball.
Oh, that is a spicy meatball. So thank you for that information.
I think there's no question from a recruiting perspective. They are going to have a serious uptick because Brian Kelly is just not a presence as a recruiter. I mean, if you're, I don't care who you are as a head coach, you're going against him, you're like, okay, I'm going to win that battle. If we lose, it's because it's Notre Dame or some of the other coaches, but it's not because of Brian Kelly. He will win. Marcus Freeman will win battles for them. The only thing curious about the pick is that you had Luke Fickell available. You had a guy who is already a proven head coach. So that says nothing about, you know, the aptitude or acumen of Marcus Freeman. He could very well be the next guy. Hell, if he wasn't coaching, head coaching at Notre Dame, I think he would be the head coach somewhere else next year. Yeah. So they may have just been caught him on the incline, but it's still curious or at least interesting that they passed over Fickell. So we'll see how that works out.
I mean, yeah, so it might be a little short-sighted because if Fickell's available after the playoff, yeah, he's obviously a pretty good coach. But again, early signing period, they were looking at a recruiting class that might be going south. Like, I think that they maybe had to panic a little bit. But I don't think it's a panic move. I do think that Marcus Freeman has the profile of a guy who's going to be a really good head coach.
I completely agree. I think Freeman was the right choice for Notre Dame. I think he's going to work out there. I mean, they've been a good program under Kelly. I think they'll probably even be better under Freeman.
And they held together that coaching staff too. So it's like,
and they held the coaching staff together.
This program is not in any way needing a reboot. And also like nobody actually liked Brian Kelly. Like, is that actually going to hurt you losing him? I don't think so.
Even Notre Dame fans didn't like Brian Kelly.
Sam Polian, the special teams coach, finally was the first assistant coach at Notre Dame to join him down there at LSU. He got one.
Greg, that was the one. So, hey, but what about this? What about Cristobal leaving Oregon for Miami?
That is crazy. That is absolutely crazy. You could not pry me out of Oregon for all the money in the world to go play in the frickin' Hard Rock, whatever that we're going to play in, 30 miles away from campus with no practice facilities in the ACC where you haven't been anything in a million years. That dude must love Miami because that is crazy.
Maybe he thought that things were the bloom was falling off the rose up there in Oregon. I don't know. I thought his team quit on him. I really did. I mean, they got destroyed by Utah twice.
Yeah.
Like after you got beat down the first time, you couldn't muster something better the second time around. That Yeah, I just I wonder if maybe some questions started to. I don't know. I don't know that.
I think you're right, Sam. But I think it's a combination of both. I think the bloom was off the rose there, and I think he just might like Miami better, might like the weather better, the culture better. I think it's probably a combination of things, that and the fact that it didn't seem to be going great for him this last year.
Oregon seems like such a plum job. Like, why would you want to get, like, that's such a great setup there. Like, everything there is perfect.
You're going to be playing in front of 15,000 people. You telling me I'm leaving Autzen Stadium to play in front of 15,000 people in a conference game against Wake Forest? Get out of here.
Hey, you know, he's going home, though.
Cannot put a storyline on that. Going home is, it makes a big deal for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense. Dude must love Miami. He must have some pupusas down there that, like, I'm literally talking about Salvadoran food. I got like Antonio's last night, so I'm thinking about it. Never mind.
Check it out. Hey, I was going to ask you guys, this name just came up in the stream. I was going to ask you about this anyway. A lot of fans, they're talking about, bring Chip Kelly back. Bring Chip Kelly back. What about Joe Brady? What about going to get Joe Brady at Oregon? He obviously didn't work out for him at Carolina, but that was a hot name a few years ago.
I mean, if I'm Oregon, I'm just going to, like, hey, Joe Moorhead, this is.
I thought so, too. He just said he's going to coach the bowl game.
Well, just like, dude, if there's what is your program DNA as Oregon? We have an awesome offense. We run our quarterback. We have crazy skill position players. Joe Moorhead's the guy who I think is best positioned to make Oregon, Oregon.
Can you pry him away from Akron?
Probably. Probably.
Yeah. I agree with you there. That's the right choice for Oregon.
Yeah, this sounds like that this, according to this poster, I don't know, says that Miami thinks they signed Joe Brady as OC already, waiting to announce. Yeah, if someone offers him a head coaching job, he won't go to Miami. All right. Yeah. So this is not talking about Joe Brady being the OC at Oregon. Somebody, if they went after him as the head coach, he would not go to Miami.
So the Joe Brady thing is like, all right, yeah, they had a really good season at LSU with Joe Burrow and those receivers. Like,
that's another great point.
Devin made that point. He's like, man, everybody's talking about Joe Brady. He had an all-time great. He had the Heisman Trophy winner. He had Justin Jefferson. He had my man with us with the Bengals right now that Michigan thought they had with the receiver, whose name
Jamar Chase.
Jamar Chase. Yeah, man. I mean, you had an all-star cast. Not hard to call plays with those dudes. I guess the one thing that I would say was, well, they had those guys the year before, too. And they did look different when Joe Brady took out. We'll say that. But
yeah, we'll say that. But also, that was an Ed Orgeron team, right? So what kind of chaos is going on? And then you got like one normal human being who's like, I can do this. And so he looked like an all-star, but he's just really like an average dude who's not too horny to coach at LSU.
I was wondering if that sentence was going to get to the end.
All right. Well, fellas, it's been another fun one. Certainly, we'll have another one to do before the holiday. We'll be able to talk recruiting class. We'll be able to talk some basketball and maybe a little more Georgia preview as we learn more about that team. So I appreciate you joining us.